I don't know if they've even found all the shell casings yet, so I'm trying to learn as much as I can about it while continuing to go on with my daily activities, and I'm finding it a challenge as well because I've decided not to discuss this any longer in front of my son. One of the first questions, like I said, that he asked was, why are the police killing that man? And thanks for not giving me the pat answer that, well, that's just the area that you live in.
And that was Allison, who lives in the neighborhood and spoke out to the issue of what she saw the night that Brian Andrus was put into the hospital by three police officers who apparently were responding to a call concerned about the way he had parked his car and his angry temper and possibly raised voices from inside the house. An unnecessary and tragic shooting, and luckily one that did not result in any other injuries to passers-by, but very well could have. A matter of concern for that community, a matter of concern for the entire Santa Cruz City community, considering that the city police don't just operate in the Button Street community, they operate citywide. And when they shot down a man downtown, Happy John Dine, who turned out to have nothing other than a toy gun, and indeed virtually every non-police witness said he had nothing in his hands, or at least they saw no toy gun in his hands, those who we talked to, and indeed those who testified to the district attorney, it was still held to be a justifiable shooting. There were no investigation was made into the firearms policy that the city police have of apparently shooting first and talking later. Interestingly enough, that seems not to be the case when people are better armed. So, for instance, in San Francisco, when a man with a shotgun was besieged by police in his vehicle several days ago in a story in the San Francisco Chronicle, they waited him out and they talked him out and he came out. And similarly, in another case in Waco, not the famous Waco case, but another case, an individual was talked out because he had a serious weapon. But apparently, if the police feel they can swagger in, threaten people, and then when they encounter resistance, can use lethal force, we have a very, very serious problem in our community. And I'm not saying that all the answers have been given on this show tonight, all the testimony is clear. It's certainly inappropriate behavior to be threatening anyone with a baseball bat. On the other hand, if somebody invades your house, armed people invade your house and are rousting a beloved partner of yours, it's not a totally difficult to understand response to try to defend that person, perhaps unwise, but certainly not beyond our comprehension. And again, we don't have, I hope to have an interview with Lori Andrus, the woman who was involved in all this. And indeed, she did give some testimony to the Santa Cruz County Sentinel the next day. You can read that in the Tuesday Sentinel. And perhaps we'll be covering that in our next show somewhat. What we're really hoping to cover is the reaction of the Button Street community in taking some action to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again, and taking some action to make sure that the police officers involved are thoroughly investigated. You heard the analysis of cop watcher Becky Johnson on some of the situation. We will have more to say about Officer Garazio and his history of violence in terms of contacts with citizens, even lethal violence in the case of a homeless man killed in 1996, and a suspicious coroner's report involved with that. But instead of simply, we're not so much trying to point fingers and names at particular officers, though I think it's important to hold every officer accountable, considering, however, the broader policies. It is Chief Belcher. It is our city council. And ultimately, it is us. We are the ones responsible for these officers and what they're doing. the bullets they're loosing into the community and into the human people in our community. And that's something we have to think about. A little music here, and then I'm going to turn to another subject in the very few remaining minutes. For those listening concerned specifically with the issue of the Button Street shooting, I will be returning on Sunday at 11 o'clock for a 2.5-hour show. That's the next edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides on 96.3 FM. And I will also be leaving with the studio what's called a loop tape about this issue. We will be playing interviews repeatedly. You'll be able to hear parts of what you've heard and other interviews that we weren't able to play because of time constraints if you stay tuned in the days ahead. And Free Radio Santa Cruz has a very varied programmership, I should say. The different programmers have different ideas about what they put out on the air. Some of it may not interest you, and that's as it should be because we have a diverse community out there. I find some of the music impossible to listen to. However, we are going to be making some tapes available to the station to play that essentially go through these interviews again and go through other interviews and continue our attempt to find some truth and put some pressure on city officials, police officials, the Citizens Police Review Board, the media, and the broader community to take some action on this issue of unrestrained police violence, which really is what this is. Let's hear a little of Peter, Paul, and Mary and get some unrestrained music for a moment.
I've had a good
And that was Peter, Paul, and Mary. Monday morning, adopted and arranged by, wow, all three of them, and a fourth, back in the mid-60s. Well, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, and the Bathrobe Spears Broadside Show will be kind of winding down and ending at 8 o'clock. But before we go, we're going to kind of do a few updates. For those who have been following the show, Salinas, the city council had a discussion and vote on a law making peaceful spear changing after dark a criminal offense punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. That became law on Tuesday. I should say it was passed into law, probably to become law within the next month. And we went to the city council to urge them to reconsider this proposal, which actually was modeled on an ordinance from Santa Cruz, the ordinance championed by Scott Kennedy, Mike Rotkin, Cynthia Matthews, all those good liberals who are have no problem with what the police force is doing in our community, and who have no problem with treating the homeless people like second and third class citizens, and apparently treating a lot of people in houses like second and third class citizens. In any case, we talked to the city council in Salinas. They gave us a hearing, and we actually apparently convinced one person. We got a 6-1 vote. We changed one vote on this issue, which isn't saying much. I shouldn't say, it certainly wasn't just us who did the vote changing, but we were a part of that. Here's a selection from the Salinas City Council meeting. I initially talked to them about another issue, the sleeping ban.
Council members, my name is Robert Morris. I'm from out of county and from Santa Cruz. Came down here today to speak on an item that's coming up on the agenda. But before I do, I'm not going to talk about that. But I'll be talking about that later. But it's a related item, and I mentioned for that reason. Am I coming through too loudly? I can never tell when I'm talking at a mic. I can back off a bit. A little closer. Thank you. I work with a group called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, in Santa Cruz, and another group called the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban, which is the onerous law we have in Santa Cruz that makes it illegal for homeless people at night to either sleep or cover up with blankets on any public property whatsoever. And since we have no campgrounds in Santa Cruz, and since it's also illegal to sleep on much private property, even with the consent of the owner, with some limited exceptions, we have 500 to 1,500 homeless people who every night have no place to lay their heads and are threatened with $162 tickets. What relevance does this have for Salinas? Well, I understand from a brief conversation with one of your legal people here that you have a similar ban against sleeping in vehicles here in Salinas, and I haven't investigated it closely, but I want to encourage you to look into it, because it's really a basic human rights violation to go after people for doing something that they have no choice about, namely falling asleep at night. We're not talking about urinating or defecating. We're not talking about abusive behavior. We're talking about what every one of us has to do every night. So I'm glad that the ACLU has drawn attention to another item on the agenda that will be discussed, and I hope that it will do a similar kind of consideration of your current law around any sleeping ban that you have in your code, and hope it receives scrutiny. In cities like Eugene, Oregon, Eugene has, for example, decriminalized sleeping in industrial areas, so you don't have to have an all or nothing kind of thing. You can make it legal for people to sleep in some parts of the city where they have to sleep, and in that way alleviate the burden. In Florida, safe sleeping zones have been set up by federal court order. Santa Monica is taking its sleeping ban to the United Nations and the World Court to consider as a basic human rights violation, which I think it is, against poor and homeless people. And I urge Salinas and your council to consider whether there are legal spaces for homeless people to sleep in Salinas, and if not, consider amending any law you have that bans sleeping, because that is a foolish and cruel joke which needs to be reconsidered. While you may not be able to provide for all, you must be sure you do not criminalize a basic human right that affects many poor people. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I was your question, I want to follow up with legal. Okay. Do we have a ban
Bob Zyron. I haven't had a chance to look at the ordinance. I can certainly research that and get a memo back to council just to inform me of what we do have on the books regarding that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And this I was really talking about is the paying law. The paying law that you are trying to pass in the city council here is unconstitutional.
That is on the agenda?
No, it's not on the agenda. Yeah, it's in the paper.
And that was some of the discussion at the Salinas City Council meeting last Tuesday. We actually found the discussion very informative because most of the speakers were against the law that made it illegal for people to peacefully ask for spare change. The law was couched as an abusive panhandling law, one that went after people who were abusive, and indeed that was a part of the law. But the significant sections had to do with not being allowed to be 10 feet from a store, not being allowed to be near a car, not being allowed to hold up a sign or say a word after dark, even if you were the politest person in the world. And the American Civil Liberties Union came out against it, and actually the papers headlined that opposition in Santa Cruz. We had similar ACLU opposition, though not as high profile. And, of course, the ACLU locally has not taken our own ask for a dime after dark, go to jail law to court or supported any cases. And, indeed, the cases are beginning to mount up in our local courts. So I think that's something for all of us to think about. And if anybody has an interest in this subject, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And we can use your assistance. And we can also perhaps give you some more information about the subject, because we are trying to change the laws and practices here in Santa Cruz to bring Santa Cruz and the rest of the country into the 20th century. I guess it's the 21st century coming up. Maybe we need to get back to the 19th century when life was more peaceful and less was criminalized. In any case, we need to head towards a civilized and humane society. The Salinas City Council is going to be, again, hopefully I'll be leaving a tape here in the studio at some point that will enable you to hear more of that discussion and debate than we have time for on this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. And just as a taste of yet another subject that we're going to hope to provide a longer tape on, the Watsonville Youth Police Abuse Forum, which happened last night. It was a forum in which ACLU Northern California attorney John Crew spoke at some length on how police departments are misusing so-called gang laws to criminalize youth by the scores, youth who have done nothing, youth who are simply at the wrong place at the wrong time, or who police decided they want to take pictures of. And what we as a community, what the young people in that community and presumably in our community can do about it. We're going to hear a little bit about that just before I leave, and hopefully, again, we'll be able to play more of that at a later time. This, again, is a speech by John Crew, ACLU attorney, to the Watsonville community last night.
But just as an overview, as Ramon mentioned, I want to start by talking a little bit about the sorts of things that we're seeing statewide in terms of police misconduct issues, particularly dealing with young people and young people of color primarily. Then I want to talk a little bit about some basic information about knowing your rights and how to use those rights with some common sense in encounters with police. And also a little bit about how to deal with those encounters when they're happening, what to do afterwards. There's a lot of literature on the table. I don't know if most of you saw it, but there's a number of handouts back there. I encourage you to take a look at it. In particular, this whole very extensive newspaper is all aimed at young people knowing their rights, and we strongly encourage you to get this, and also some wallet-sized cards on dealing with police. But let me talk now about what we are seeing is really the number one problem, most common, in some ways the most serious problem, growing problem in police misconduct in dealing with young people, particularly young people of color. And that has to do with a variety of tactics that law enforcement is using statewide, in fact, spreading throughout the nation to deal with problems of gang violence. And let me start by saying that obviously gang violence is a very serious problem in many of our communities. It's a horrific problem in terms of the toll that it takes on young people's lives and on their safety. but some of the tactics that law enforcement are using in this area unfortunately throws everybody together in the same net and labels young people sometimes gang members who are not and treats them as criminals when they're not. Now that's obviously a very important civil liberties issue, a civil rights concern, a legal concern. But also, from our point of view, is dangerous because it harms the fight against real crime and violence. Now, you talk to cops, they say the best weapon they have in fighting crime, it's not their gun, it's not their baton or their pepper spray, it is the trust and confidence of the community they serve. Y'all may have heard about community policing. Everybody in the country is now doing community policing, which is based on the idea that we're going to have the police work in close contact and partnership with the community to work on public safety issues. And that's a sound strategy that makes sense, but if the police are out there treating large segments of the community as though they're criminals, violating their rights, they're not going to be able to trust the police and work with the police on dealing with underlying problems. So if you really want to get a handle from a public safety standpoint on the very serious issue of gang violence, you need to start making some basic distinctions between people who are innocent of criminal activity and those that may actually be involved in it. You need to break down some of the assumptions that are made about people, sometimes that are frankly rooted in stereotypes and racism. And so what we've seen all too common the scenario is, you know, young people, particularly young people of color, in some communities it's Latino, in some it's African American, in some it's Asian American, Southeast Asian in particular, for example, in Orange County, who are stopped for no reason by police on a corner, not involved in any illegal activity, asked to produce identification, officer writes down the information on a little card, sometimes they ask them to line up and take the picture, often not without an arrest. Officers go away, young people feel they've been harassed. That's what the young people see and experience, but that's not the end of the story. The question then is, what happens with that information that the police have obtained? And what happens to that photograph that they took of the individual, which, by the way, was probably taken illegally, but we'll get to that in a minute. What is happening is law enforcement throughout the state of California are compiling lists of suspected gang members. And indeed, in California, there is a statewide computerized database where law enforcement has secretly labeled 250,000 young people in California as alleged gang members. And I say secretly labeled because they don't tell you when they label you a gang member. Now, there are 150 law enforcement agencies in California, actually some in Nevada too, that are signed on to this database. It used to be called the GRADE system. Now it's called CalGang. I need to say that we do not have any evidence that the actual law enforcement agencies in Santa Cruz County are at least yet part of that database. They were not linked up as far as we know. You disagree with that at all? That sounds good. Okay. But the latest information we had is that they weren't. It's almost irrelevant because it's clear that virtually every law enforcement agency is keeping their own list of whether or not they're linked up. Let me quickly tell you where GRADE comes from. It is a computer database. It is a gang fighting strategy that was first developed in Los Angeles. Now, it is true that Los Angeles knows something about gang violence. They've had a real problem with it. But from my point of view, again from a common sense point of view, have the law enforcement agencies in Los Angeles been successful in fighting gang violence? Have the tactics they've used it engendered confidence from the community in dealing with these problems? We would suggest that you don't imitate tactics that have been proven to be a failure. But unfortunately, the tactics that have been used in Los Angeles in particular have spread throughout the state, and we're seeing them now all over Northern California.
And that was John Crew of the American Civil Liberties Union speaking in Watsonville last night. I'm going to hopefully be able to make that whole hour-long, actually it's more like 80 minutes, discussion and following audience interaction available to the station to play later. And you can, of course, join me on Bathrobe Spears Broadsides on Sunday at 11. We're going to return with more and more. We have a whole bunch of tapes piling up we'd like to play for you. And as for folks concerned about the Button Street shooting and about police misconduct in our community, please give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, if you have any new information about the Brian Andrus shooting. And if you have any other problems with police misconduct, give a call to SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, at 475-2012. It's time now for you to educate yourself on broader, greener issues on subjects that I always wish I knew something about, but never bothered to educate myself on, except when I happened to hear it coming over the radio on Uncle Dennis's show. You're going to hear about Earth First. You're going to hear some stuff you didn't know, and maybe a little bit that you did, and it's all going to be put in a way that is both entertaining and educational. Dennis, take over.
Six point three FM in Santa Cruz.
For the next 2.5 hours, you will be tuned to Bathrobes, Spears, Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor here in Santa Cruz, with special guests to be announced shortly. Stay with us, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. This assumes we can get our equipment to work, of course. Having a little trouble with our stuff, but I think, yep, we're back.
Yeah. Watergate, punk rock, Bacon, Reagan, Palestine, terror on the airline, Ayatollahs in Iran, Russians in Afghanistan, Wheel of Fortune, Sally Ride, heavy metal, suicide, foreign debts, homeless vets, AIDS, crack, Bernie gets hypodermics on the shore, China's under martial law, rock and roll, a color wars, I can't take it anymore. We didn't start the fire, there was only violence, since the world's returning. We didn't start the fire, but when we are gone, will it still go on and on and on and on?
That was Billy Joel. We didn't start the fire, and we're hoping to start a little fire here, though. In the studio with us, we have, well, let him introduce himself.
Yes, my name is Jorge Castro, and I've been a homeless citizen of Santa Cruz since 1980, officially 1981 when I registered for food stamps. I'm what I consider myself liberal. And as an observer on this planet, strictly, I never try to involve myself in any particular events or whatever's happening. I just try to remain an observer in life. Another thing is, I'm a realist, and on top of it all, I'm a survivalist, and I have been ever since the Vietnam War.
You've been a man who's lived outdoors throughout that period of time, right?
Oh, yes.
In fact, that involves, in effect, often peacefully breaking a few laws that you have to break in order to survive, right?
My whole life is illegal. I've been camping so long now, I'm entrenched at Pogonip. The police have never found me, but then again, that's because of my Vietnam background. I'm a camouflage expert and the whole nine yards, you know.
Let me ask you this. You know, you have a lot of friends in this community. You know a lot of people. You've been here for over almost two decades, and longer, actually, because you've been coming back and forth from up north in Berkeley and San Francisco. How many people have your kind of expertise? Do you find it rare, or is it becoming increasingly common in terms of living lightly on the land and not getting involved with the police?
I consider myself an old school hippie. I was let off the plane in San Francisco airport straight from Vietnam, no detoxification, no reentry programs, no reorientation into society, nothing. They basically took my six hand grenades off my flap jacket, three on each side, and I handed them my AR-15, fully automatic AR-15, Alias M16, and all the rest of my armaments, and asked me to get on the plane and you were going home. And that was how I entered the United States. I went from one gung-ho Marine, and I got let off at the San Francisco airport, ushered into a taxi and dropped off at Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley. And that was
now you're in Santa Cruz. You're looking clean cut, you're wearing clean clothes, you don't look like any stereotype of a homeless person I've ever seen.
Well, but believe it or not, as well as I might look to a lot of people every day, thanks to the director of the St. Francis Soup Kitchen, every maybe Thanksgiving and Christmas and everything, Mrs. Lee Laboa, the director of this, she always made it a point to take me upstairs and let me take a couple of a couple of sets of clothing for myself as a present, and I've saved them over the periods of years that I've been associated with the soup kitchen since Peter Crota started back in 81 down at the flats. I used to help him unload the clothes, and I always managed to grab a few clothes, so I have plenty of clothes, but they're all donated clothes from the public, from the Santa Cruz citizens.
look everything.
I know, they're sharp. I can't believe they throw them away.
That's the way to go, I think. I too tend to go for those fashions, you know, true and tried fashions, I guess I call them. Now, you have, we have a number of topics you were going to discuss today. Is there one you'd like to begin with?
Yes. The pockets of homeless that are deeply entrenched out in their camps that are all alcohol-based type of sicknesses and stuff. And as the years go by here in Santa Cruz, they're becoming so entrenched that they're just being lost in the shuffle. And these are your original homeless group, you know, from back in the 80s, and half of them are dead. You know a lot of them. I've heard you speaking to a lot of them over the past, and they're the ones that worry me the most, because I've been the town drunk for the past 18 years now. And
don't seem drunk now, though.
No, thanks to Lee LeBeau and the good, kind judge Salazar, my hero. He's the only judge down there that I've ever seen as a fair and square dude.
I have to agree with you on that.
I made promises to them on my birthday 2 years ago that maybe I should just drop this way of life and reintegrate with society and the community. And it's working. It's been the most boring part of my life. Everything that I've known to be fun has always been a big drunk. And I miss them days and everything, but it's time to go on, and I have very good 20 years left, maybe, and I should take full advantage of them sober.
So you're saying your concern is about these folks who are your friends or your acquaintances, your colleagues out in the homeless camps, that I guess you were talking to me at the Homeless Community Resource Center a few days ago, telling me that they don't come in for services. They essentially live an independent kind of lifestyle. And you have some thoughts on solutions, or should we say services, that could be provided for them that might attract them, or at least help them.
True, true, totally true. I said earlier that I consider myself old school hippie. Riots back in the 60s, all that stuff. Well, being the alcoholic I am, there was a pocket of us old school hippies that when they coined the term homeless, I guess in the paper that came out in the Sentinel back then, when I first read it, homeless, I felt so ashamed. I couldn't believe it. You know, what a ugly word, you know, homeless. And here I was, a decorated veteran from Vietnam. Hey, wait a minute. But no, it hurt. It really does. It's a very sickening term. But we were heavy into our alcoholism back then. And there was old school unit to that particular group of people, but with this, you know, with the separation of generations and stuff, at least back then when we were getting drunk in the 80s, there was always people like me that knew better than to do it on a 24-hour basis forever. We stopped and went sober for maybe a week and stuff, but as us old schoolers eventually died off or got so sick that we wound up in some rest home like Two Feathers and everybody else, it's looking really terrible. And the bad part is that because of their habits, these entrenched homeless people, because of their habits, they're not really wanted at the shelters. They're the ones that get kicked out, 86 for life, whatever, you know. And it's bad policy, and how do you bring them back in? As you provide more services for the homeless, more new homeless come. It's sort of a revolving door issue. And in the meantime, these pockets that are out in the woods get deeper and deeper entrenched into this homeless way of life. And I'm totally against making homelessness a way of life. It's not a way of life. There's a way of putting a halt to it. And then when I heard your debate with Mr. Rotkin, but he's a hero to me.
Be frank now.
You know, the end of the 70s, going into the 80s, Mr. Rotkin, when I heard that you were having a debate with him, I said, is that guy still around? I was so happy, because back then it was no growth policy, And I'm still for the no growth, but then in a way, because I'm a San Lorenzo laborer, I kind of want growth, but I don't want San Jose Computer Valley moving over this hill and into our community. And they've done a pretty snazzy job holding back the tide, and people like Mr. Rockton are responsible for not letting that tide come this way.
Mr. B. Smith. Actually, we have a second guest arriving in the studio, the infamous B. E. Smith. B., have a seat in that kind of floppy chair over there. This is Jorge B. E.
We met. How you doing?
Fine. And I listened to your seminar, and I didn't even know I was free until I. It's slowly coming to me, and I told you about my case, and that's coming tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. And I'm shaking. The police have really had me stressed out. I can't believe it.
Can we change from what we were discussing?
Sure.
Go ahead to that case since we have B.E. with us here, and just maybe you can give us some background, and then B., maybe you can give us some of your thoughts on the situation.
To begin with, like I say, I've been homeless, and I've been a homeless community member now for 18 years. And 2 years ago, on my birthday, which was February 8th, I decided to stop drinking and rejoin the community. And I figured a two-year period would be sufficient as a temporary, clean and sober period where I wasn't going to work. I was only just going to sit there and look at everything and take a good gander of what's going on. And I sobered up, and I'm doing all this community service. In other words, I'm like doing what the court orders you to do when you've done wrong. I do it as 24 hours a day. And so I'm a community service worker, sort of. So I decided I needed a new set of friends and everything you're supposed to do as a rehabilitated alcoholic. One of the ways I cured my alcoholism was by going to the same bar that I had been a regular since 1981 at, off and on, and just sit there with all the drunks and the alcoholics and stuff and not refrain from doing it, and it's working. It really was working great. So now I'm out looking for new friends and a new set of group of people to hang with and everything, and I'm seeing everything in a different light as a sober person. And I meet two outstanding guys. They're from New Jersey. They're new. They're almost like tourists, but they've been here like for about over 30 days. That's from what they tell me and everything. And we're sitting at the bar downtown, and I had gotten to know them for about maybe a month total. And we'd meet at the bar and then play pool in the back. And what I noticed about these two young guys in their 20s was that they attracted a lot of women, something that's been away from my life for 20 years as a drunk. I never bothered women because I couldn't take care of myself. Why lie to them like I'm some kind of big shot or something? And I just don't, I have that much respect for women that I'm not going to bother them with my problems. Or lie to them and say I'm somebody I'm not. So I made these great friends, and everything was great. Then I go invite one of them, my invitation, to go to Callahan's, which is a lot of motorcycles and rhythm and blues every night. Free, no cover charge there. So it's inexpensive, and I have $3 in my pocket, and yeah, I can buy a Coke. And besides, one of the new bartenders was somebody that used to pick me up as a laborer down at the San Lorenzo to help him unload sheetrock and stuff. So off we go. It was my idea. Here I am, and his friends and everybody said, hey, we'll meet you in about an hour and a half, about 10:30, over at Callahan's. His friend had a game coming up in the pool table with a beautiful young lady, and so he wasn't about to walk out with us. He wanted to go to his pool game back there, and we took off. And the most closest way of getting to Callahan's, the Asti, was crossing the bridge. You have to cross the bridge to get there. So off we go. We go out the door. We say our goodbyes. We know when we're supposed to meet with everybody, and here we go. Neither I nor him have any warrants. He's a spitting image of a good East, you know, New Jersey kid. He's with the union. He's an electrician. He's a journeyman. He's making, geez, what, I've never even heard of people making this kind of money, $1,000+ a week. And off we go. He has no crime. We've never been involved in any drug crimes or even related to any drug scenes or anything. And we're walking and I'm bragging that we've got the best looking girls trying to get on our pool table to play partners and everything. I actually knew some people that would have apartments, you know, a room in an apartment somewhere that maybe they can perhaps pay half that much, which would still look good to anybody renting a room, 500 plus, you know. And that was a lot better than paying the 800 to 1,000 at the motel per week. So, I mean, 280 and up a week. So, everything was all go. We were walking. Everything was fine. Two normal citizens going somewhere. When out of the corner of this guy's eye, and I'm noticing as we're leaving the bar, his volume of his voice is going up. And then he's starting to sway a little. And I'm noticing that the fresh air is hitting this guy. Well, one city block later, and we're at the bottom of the bridge, or getting close to the bridge, he starts slurring. And he's walking, when it looks like he's walking towards a certain angle, when actually he's walking this way, you know, he's looking like, uh-oh. And then he spots three thugs, you know, down by underneath the bridge area, you know, off to the side there. He spots three thugs, three dealers, Hispanics. Three dealer Hispanics. They're looking at us, kind of like giving us that